Check one, two. Check one, two. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I am your host, Andy Proctor, and in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Break. Okay, everyone. Welcome to the BYU episode for week four of the season. We're in week four, but we are leading into BYU's third game of the year as they came off a bye week in week three. So today we're going to be reviewing their week two win over Stanford. And then we will be previewing and doing scouting report for their game this Saturday against ECU. I have to apologize. I'm again late to it this week. Boy, life is just crazy, isn't it? We're going to try to get you a quick listen here, get you kind of, you know, back up to speed with where we left off with Stanford and get you prepped for Saturday's game against ECU. Game is going to happen a little bit earlier in the day because the game is happening back east. So I think it's a 5:30 kickoff. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started. The Cougs have started the year 2-0, which is awesome. We always love that. Although it's a schedule that they should have ended up 2-0. In fact, a lot of folks have said that likely this year's schedule is a year that BYU should probably end up 6-0 to start the season. Maybe there's a game here and there that they drop. It seems like every year they drop a game they shouldn't. Last year it happened to be against Kansas. You know, they always drop one game that they should win, but then they don't. And then there's a game where they maybe probably shouldn't win, but they do. So starting the year 2-0. Coming off of a win last week, 27-23, Cougs over Stanford. Jumping back into the game a little bit, the first series, just in general, the offense did not play as well against Stanford as it did against Portland State, which should be obvious, right? It's a higher level of play, a higher level of competition. So, but still, I think that compared to what we expected from Stanford and what we actually got from Stanford, which was pretty even, with our expectations, I think it's safe to say that the Cougars offense did not play especially well. The first series ended in a turnover on downs. We did successfully convert the first fourth down conversion attempt earlier in the series, but then went for it again and ended up turning the ball over on downs for that first series. The offense responded well the next series by marching 85 yards in 6 plays in 3 minutes to go down for a touchdown. They only went up 6-0 though, as Kalani decided again for a kind of random 2-point attempt, which failed. Which again, side tangent kind of early on in the episode. I feel like Kalani does this a lot, by the way, like his fake punts, his fourth down conversion attempts, his 2-point attempts, etc. They always happen at like the most random times when you don't expect them, which I guess like that sort of makes sense to do them when no one expects them, because then maybe you're more likely to succeed at doing it. But it also doesn't make sense if it doesn't make sense to do it in the moment. Does that make sense? what I mean by that is, if there's no value in going for a 2-point conversion in the first quarter, even if no one's expecting it, then why do it, right? There's way less value in attempting a fake punt when your punter is standing in your own end zone, right? Yeah, no one's expecting it, but it's also really dumb. Fakes and conversions work really well when you consistently do the conservative smart thing over and over and over, and lull your opponent into thinking that you're this really conservative, smart tactician. And, you know, then they're positive that you're going to be punting from near midfield, or they're positive that you're not going for it on fourth down because you never do. Then you've lulled them into thinking that, and then you'd go for it, and then you're successful, right? Anyway, that's my tangent. Back on track. After the touchdown in the second series, the next 6 series end in either a field goal or a punt, 3 of each, in fact. The Cougs would only end up scoring one more touchdown the rest of the night, scoring 12 of their 27 points on 4 field goals. They did put 2 points on the board with a safety, which I thought was pretty cool. Offensively, again, Bear Bachmeier was not great. He went 17 for 27 for 175 yards, averaged 6.5 yards per attempt, no touchdowns, no interceptions. It wasn't even that his numbers looked worrisome, though. It was his form. It was his air, his poise, his throwing motion, his you know, his accuracy. I'm really glad that BYU has one more G5 game on their schedule before they start conference play, because Bear Bachmeyer needs to have one more chance to have a breakout performance, where a game where he gets to play the entire game, right? Before he starts Big 12 play, or BYU is going to struggle. Again, it's one of those things where we have to kind of adjust our expectations, knowing that, you know, what's the typical history with teams that start a freshman quarterback? It's you know, 9 wins is awesome. We should be very happy if we go, you know, 8-5 or 9-4. BYU rushed for 157 yards on the ground, 110 of which came from LJ Martin. I feel like he was like the lone bright spot on the offensive side of the ball this game. That and Chase Roberts did get back on track. First game, I think he only had one reception for like 4 yards. But against Stanford, he logged 84 yards on 5 receptions. The longest reception of 41 yards, which is great. It's good to see Chase back doing his thing. The defense was awesome. They held Stanford to 161 total yards, most of which came through the air in the fourth quarter. In the first half, Stanford's longest drive was 20 yards and ended in a punt. And then, fun fact, Stanford finished the half with 19 total yards of offense. So cumulatively, they held them to, I mean, they for after that 20-yard drive, they held them to negative yards the rest of the half. BYU held the Cardinal to 3 negative yardage series in a row, negative 13 yards, negative 9 yards, negative 3 yards. As I mentioned, they forced safety in the second quarter, which was awesome. Always love to see your defense be able to put someone really deep in their own end zone. There was an interception, which I called, by the way. If you guys remember episode 5 from week 2, I told y'all that if Coach Hill would be willing to put some pressure on Ben Gulbranson and enough pressure not to sack him, but enough to make him force a bad throw, which he was very apt to do with these crossing routes across the middle of the field, we knew that the ball would sail high and very likely be intercepted, which is exactly what happened. They pressured him. He forced it on a crossing route, forced it a little bit high, sailed right into the waiting arms of safety Raider DeMooney. So, again, just plugging, film study is important. If you study film, you know exactly where to attack. You know exactly where you can create opportunities. This is the thing I'm talking about when I talk about BYU last year. People say, BYU leading the FBS in turnovers, that's just luck, or it's just kind of luck of the draw. Oh, they got more fumbles, or they just happened to get more interceptions. No. There's certainly some of that, right? Some fumbles just bounce your way. You know, some people, even though they wrap up really well, just happen to fumble the ball. But defensive turnovers are created most of the time. They don't just happen, okay? Special teams. We don't talk a lot about special teams on this podcast, but I feel like it's notable this week what happened with BYU against Stanford. The first thing is Parker Kingston, second game in a row, he's fumbled the punt return. He was subsequently replaced by number 19 Tiger Bachmeyer, who might have earned himself the starting spot against ECU this week after he returned a punt for 44 yards. Interestingly enough, number 5 Cody Hagan also had a beautiful kickoff return that was also 44 yards. And then, gosh, serendipitous, Will Farron was a perfect 4-for-4 on field goals. I love all these fours. 4-for-4 on field goals and 1-for-1 on PATs, which should surprise no one. It's as long as his attempt was from 36 yards. I feel like, you know, if you listen to the Utah episode from this week, we talked a little bit about Utah's freshman kicker, who they have very prematurely dubbed Legatron. I feel like if anyone deserves that nickname, it is Will Farron. I guess it was good that BYU played what many would consider a subpar game and still won by 24 points. They almost pitched a shutout, which would have been awesome, against a team like Stanford. Now, like we said in a film last week, Stanford is not, they're not even close to what they once were. But they're still good football. Like, they're still a former P5 program. They still get good recruits. They're still, you know, Division I college football team. And so, you know, for BYU to play as poorly as they did and still win that game by 24 points, I think is impressive. Let's go ahead and jump into the ECU game. Here's the thing. In football, if any of you played football, you know, we talk about this a lot where games, you know, early season games or what we call tune-up games, games that are against teams that, you know, probably athletically are inferior, a subpar to you. They say, hey, we don't take anyone lightly. We're going to treat everyone as if they're the most important game, and don't ever do it. You know, in high school, I'll admit we did it once. I remember there was a game we had preparing for a team at Carbon High School. I could even tell you where Carbon High School is. Is it in Richfield? Because no, they got Richfield High School in Richfield. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you where the school is. And we started prepping a week early for, we prepped like maybe one day for them, and then we prepped for Morgan High School for about a week and a half. So not going to lie, this episode for BYU-ECU is going to be a little bit about that. I tried to go ahead and watch film on these guys. I tried to dig into the coaching staff, dig into the offensive personnel, the defensive personnel, and study schemes in general. I was up late watching film on these guys. You know, I was up until like 3 or 3:30 last night. And I just, honestly, I don't think it's worth y'all's time to cover personnel. A couple people to be aware of, but this is a game that BYU should very much go into expecting to put together a performance somewhere in between what you did to Stanford and what you did to Portland State. I don't think there's even anything notable about the coaching staff. I mean, head coach Blake Harrell, he's in his sixth season overall at East Carolina. It's his first year as a head coach. He's off to a good start. And he had a close game against North Carolina State where they had a close loss. They got down 17-0 early and then were able to come back and make it close. Coach Blake Harrell was previously the defensive coordinator and linebackers coach. I believe he's actually the interim head coach. He made that position around last Christmas time. I believe he's getting a shot to prove himself this year before ECU starts to search for a new head honcho. I could be wrong. He had previously coached at the Citadel and Kennesaw State FCS team, where his team did finish number 8 at the end of the season in the FCS coaches poll. So he's able to coach kids to success, but and I guess with the coach, you know, coaching staff, you can't really draw the comparison of FCS to FBS because it's not the same as comparing athletes at those levels, right? But still, very little to note or to be aware of with this guy. The offensive coordinator, same thing. His name is John David Baker. It's his second season as the OC there, ECU. He did do a 3-year stint at Ole Miss where he was co-offensive coordinator for 2 years, but other than that, not a whole lot to talk about. On the offensive side of the ball, their quarterback, number 4, his name is Caton Hauser. He's 6'3", 225. He's a senior. He's actually thrown for some pretty good yards so far. Again, I think part of that is that they've played a couple cupcake teams. So he's 83 for 116. 71.6% completion percentage, which is impressive, no matter who you're playing. Just under 1,000 yards passing, 5 touchdowns and 1 interception. He's good at making quick decisions and can put the ball right where it needs to be. He's got a good arm. He can take a hit if needed. Number 11, Mike Wright Jr. He's the backup quarterback. 6'4", 195 pounds. A little bit taller, a little bit skinnier, though, about 30 pounds skinnier. He doesn't throw the ball very much, but he gets in to run the ball on QB keepers and option plays and whatnot. So he's had 8 rushes for 50 yards so far. Averages about 6.5 yards per rush, and he has 1 touchdown. So 2 quarterbacks to see, number 4, Caton Hauser, to throw the ball, and number 11, Mike Wright Jr., to run the ball. Again, honestly, they've got some guys to be aware of. Number 7, London Montgomery, is their running back. He's got 30 carries for 108 yards. As a team, I think they primarily are a spread offense. They're going to pass the ball for the most part. I don't think their running backs are necessarily going to be a threat. Looking at their offensive line, I think the same thing. I mean, sure, they're okay for being, you know, an FBS team, a G5 FBS team, but, you know, BYU defensively, especially defensive line-wise, if they have a problem, you know, stopping ECU's running game, I think BYU has bigger problems than, you know, maybe our lack of preparation for this game. Although I will assume that BYU has done their due diligence. They are probably not, you know, jumping over or skipping any preparation for ECU. They've probably done their film study, and we could probably take a leaf out of their book. But in the interest of time, we're going to keep this pretty short. So number seven, London Montgomery is the running back if you're worried about him. Number eight, Javonte Connor is a tight end. He took a pretty good hit against NCSU after catch. Took the hit, weathered it pretty good, and then he took it 50 yards plus to the house after contact. So he's probably the most notable pass catcher on the offensive side of the ball. They got a couple wide receivers to pay attention to. Number nine, Anthony Smith. He's 6'3", 190 pounds. He's a senior. He's caught 23 passes for 241 yards so far this season. He averages just under 11 yards per catch. And then you've also got a guy by the name of Brock Spaulding, like the football, or I guess basketball, volleyball? Anyway, Spaulding brand. He's number 10. He's a little bit smaller. He's 5'11", 193 pounds. He's got about the same production. He's got 13 receptions for 221 yards and a touchdown. He averages 17 yards of reception. So those are the two guys to pay attention to. Number 10, Brock Spaulding, and number 9, Anthony Smith. Those are the guys we're going to try to get to for the most part. Again, watching film, yeah, it's hard to get a beat on them because they, you know, I'm not going to go sit and watch through three full games. But the game against NCSU, North Carolina State, they did okay. They caught some passes. But again, I think defensively or just athletically, scheme-wise, I think BYU has superior athletes. If there's anybody to look out for, it'd be those three. Actually, pretty crazy that their top three leading receivers are number eight, number nine, and number 10. So kind of cool. Makes it easy to track who to look out for. Like I said, offensive line-wise, I'm sure they've got some guys, but I'm not going to pay attention to that right now. Defensively, their defensive coordinator is a guy by the name of Josh Aldridge. It's his first year as a defensive coordinator here at ECU. His previous job was at Auburn. I think he was like a defensive assistant of some kind. They have some guys here that we can maybe pay attention to. On the defensive line, I think rather than talking about personnel, it's good to know that generally speaking, they're going to run a couple of variations of defensive formations. They're going to run, very occasionally, they'll run a nickel defense, 4-2-5. But they tend to like more of a 3-4 or a 3-3-5. So three down defensive linemen. And then of those four, three or four linebackers, they're usually going to walk one or two of them up on the line and kind of give you that false, four or five man front. Maybe they'll drop into pass coverage. Maybe they'll end up blitzing. Here's the important thing. No matter if it's a true defensive end or a walked-up linebacker on the end, these guys are not very good about maintaining their outside pressure. They're not good at setting the edge, basically. So the term setting the edge is when you're playing a defensive end or if you're an outside linebacker, the last thing you want to do is create lots of space for someone to run inside of you. You want to force them to the middle where everyone can get kind of caught up all together in a big pile. And certainly the last thing you want to do is go upfield really far and allow a running back or a quarterback to run outside and get to the boundary. And these guys are pretty bad at that. If you watch film against NCSU, lots of times where North Carolina State's quarterback was able to rush, make more time, running back is able to cut back a lot because these guys just aren't disciplined on the edge. So if Bear Backmeyer has any difficulty passing downfield, which I don't think he should, he would have no problem creating more time for himself to throw or just running downfield because those defensive ends are bad and not like 80s bad. I mean, like they don't maintain outside leverage to set the edge bad. So that's the biggest thing to be aware of. A couple things, defensive tackles. They got a couple guys in there that they're real big and sort of fast, I guess. Number 44, actually, I should get his name. Number 44, Preston Carr. He's a 6'3", 300-pound junior. He does shoot the gap pretty fast. He's pretty strong. He's pretty quick. Despite his size being 300 pounds, I mean, I saw a couple plays against North Carolina State where he actually got in there pretty good. So if there's anyone to pay attention to, I guess it would be him. Again, number 44, Preston Carr. But the other tackles that I saw one play where they ran like a defensive tackle twist. And the two tackles, the one cut across the face, the other one wrapped around. I don't know if I've ever seen a slower pass rush before. I mean, the quarterback threw the ball before the one defensive tackle even reached the pocket. And it wasn't like he got the ball off all that fast. So I think Bear and honestly LJ Martin from a running perspective should have an easy enough time with these defensive ends. Maybe a hard time with defensive tackle number 44. Their linebackers, they got a couple of them. Again, nothing here that I think is very notable. One or two guys show some promise, but as a group, they have a tendency to shoulder tackle. A lot of times the guys, like I mentioned earlier, that are stand-up ends, they'll be undisciplined in their edge setting. I wouldn't say they're easily influenced by misdirection plays, but they're not as quick on their initial reads as they could be. So a little bit slow to get to where the ball's actually going. From a defensive backfield perspective, I think the weakest spot is cornerback number 15, Jordy Lowry. He's 5'11", 190 pounds, which, again, that's not like the smallest cornerback I've ever seen in my entire life. But you have to know like how to manage your weight, how to manage your size. He is able to be blocked and pushed downfield quite a ways. He got beat downfield on the long post against North Carolina State. In all reality, it was cover two, and his job was to sit in the flat. And his safety, number three, had his eyes in the backfield and didn't come over to help. But he's still, like, he's quick, and he caught up to the receiver. But it's one of those things where, like, as you're covering in zone, you don't just cover an area if there's no man in it, right? You got to go with the guy in your zone until one of your teammates can pick him up. He got beat pretty bad on that. So the guy I just mentioned, strong safety number three, Tegan Wilk, gave up the noted touchdown I just mentioned. His eyes were in the backfield, and, you know, he just got totally played by a play-action pass. He did have an interception a couple plays later, though, so he can certainly make reads and know where the ball's going. So maybe number three, Tegan Wilk, is someone to take advantage of, but also maybe pay attention to. Again, I watched a lot of film late in the night. Not a whole lot that I think is notable or that you guys need to be aware of. So they'll blitz backers every once in a while. They run a lot of cover one and cover two. Very occasionally they'll run cover three. Seems like their defense is pretty vanilla. Which I wonder if that's from a perspective of like wanting to keep things simple for athletes that are, you know, trying to perform better and trying to find their way. Or if that's just this defensive coordinator's kind of MO and wants to keep it simple. I don't know. As far as goal line situations are concerned, if you know, BYU were to stack the box, and get in there real tight with like a double tight end or like a, you know, a strong offset eye formation, ECU tends to have a 6-man front, and they have all 11 guys in the box, you know, against, like I said, any of those traditional I formation setups. So leaves a lot of room for you to kind of use your corners. I wouldn't be surprised at BYU if they get down into the red zone or down into the goal line situation, if they don't do maybe a couple play action passes and throw something up at the corner, maybe let guys like Chase Roberts go get it, maybe a big tight end like Carson Ryan, something like that. So honestly, I think this is going to be a great opportunity for BYU's offense to kind of just do some soul searching and feel things out and just run your offense, right? I don't think that Aaron Roderick, as the BYU offensive coordinator, I don't think he's going to have to go too deep into his bag with this game to create opportunities. I think that, much like you saw against Portland State, I think this is going to be a good opportunity for BYU's offensive line and BYU's running back room to try to assert some dominance, to get into the groove, get comfortable with knowing where your blocks are supposed to be going, running backs knowing where the holes are, where the cuts are, really establish that run game, make it really comfortable for the offense, and then, you know, give Barrett Bachmeier plenty of time to focus on a couple easy passing concepts, get him comfortable, get him familiar, get lots of repetitions out, let him throw the ball, you know, 20, 25, 30 times. Let him try to rack up maybe 200 plus yards of passing. let him get two, maybe three touchdowns in the air, hopefully one touchdown on the ground, something like that. This is a game where, assuming that BYU's defense can continue to perform at the level that it has, I would really look forward to seeing BYU do something like 35-0, you know, 42-10, 42-7, something like that. As of right now, on Thursday evening, boy, we're getting this out late, the spread, oh, wow, that surprised me. The spread is currently BYU by 6.5, which really is them, you know, again, the home team gets 3 points on the spread. So they're expecting expecting BYU to win by about a touchdown to 10 points. That surprises me. The over and under is 49.5. I am expecting more of BYU, I think. And maybe it's, again, it's very classic BYU fan of me to expect BYU to put up a lot of points and to maybe be better than the rest of the world thinks they are. But that's because I've seen them play really well. I've seen them, you know, do amazing things and have complete, really well-rounded games from every position group on both sides of the ball. And in fact, if you count special teams on all three sides of the ball. Okay, so like I said, the game is this coming Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Mountain Time. It's on ESPN2. Yeah, I really think the Cougs are going to walk away with this one. I think they're going to start the season 3-0, and they're going to enter conference play next week as they begin with Colorado, which will be a fun game. They'll start in Boulder, so they're going on a little bit of a road trip the next 2 weeks, this weekend against Eastern Carolina, next week against Colorado, and then they'll be home against West Virginia first week of October. So let me know your thoughts. Let me know what you think. Again, not so much preparation this week, but next week we'll hit a little bit harder. We'll have a little bit more content to go on. People that I think are more notable, a team that I think merits, you know, full preparation in Colorado. So thanks for listening to the pod. I really appreciate you guys. Looking forward to a good game this weekend. Go Cougs.